Good evening, everyone. Brian Newbert here from goldenblack.com, live in his car, weaving between horse-drawn carriages here in downtown Indianapolis following Purdue's 70-66 loss to Texas A&M at Gainbridge Fieldhouse at the Indy Classic. This is your goldenblack.com drive home post-game podcast, and it's brought to you by our friends at East End Grill and Ripple and Company, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Sand Valley Resort, and the Whitaker Inn, which I'm about 100 miles south of, so won't be driving by there while this thing's still running, hopefully. You never know with me. Could go a little long, but I don't intend to. So Purdue loses for the third time this season, 3-for-3 on losing to really high activity level, high pressure defensive teams. Texas A&M is very good defensively. They're very good on the glass. And it got to Purdue, and it got the best of Purdue, and that was the difference in the game, obviously. Same story. There are common denominators between all these losses, and they're not really foreign common denominators among Purdue losses in general in recent years. Purdue turned the ball over 16 times, led to 20 points for the opposition. That is a years-long common thread among Purdue's failures, and it was certainly the story of the game here today in Indy. Just a deal where Texas A&M was the most physical team I think Purdue's played, the most high activity, relentless defensive team, the best rebounding team, and they were number one in the country in offensive rebounding percentage, and they were top 10 in defensive efficiency prior to this game for a reason. They are very disruptive defensively, and Purdue didn't respond very well, or Purdue's just not equipped to respond very well against these teams. I guess we'll find out the rest of the season, but Purdue was the less physical, the less tough team of these two, and I think that's, in a roundabout way, kind of shining a light on what Purdue was before that it now might not be. You know, Purdue was a pretty physical offensive team these last couple years. And when I say physical, I don't mean Zach Edey dunking on people, posting up, rebounding, drawing fouls. I mean just the screening and the activity level. I've said that a lot in this podcast already, haven't I? And just the space he occupied. He was just such a presence. There's no point in talking about him because he's not coming back. And Purdue can't replace him, but I'm just using him to put a face on what Purdue does not have now. It's just, it's not that physical an offensive team. Its screening isn't as overwhelming as it used to be. Its handoffs, its general offensive machinations, however you pronounce that, just aren't as crisp as they were before, in part because they're not just beating people up and they're not just dominating people physically, and that's an advantage that Purdue had before, less so than it's a disadvantage Purdue has now, if that makes any sense. I just think that these really high pressure teams can really disrupt a Purdue offense built on kind of precision and really executing at a very high level. When they just blow it up, it's problematic. And that's what a few of these teams have been able to do to Purdue in the half court. And they've been able to maybe slow Purdue down a little bit in the full court, as Purdue isn't particularly wealthy with ball handlers right now, as we talked about with the Penn State game. But just Purdue hung in there long enough via transition. They got out in the open floor a bunch in the first half off of Texas A&M's turnovers, long rebounds, whatever it might have been. And that gave Purdue enough high percentage offense to hang around in the first half. But once Texas A&M started keeping Purdue out of transition, and this became a 100% half-court game, Purdue just didn't have enough in its bag of tricks or whatever term you'd want to use to score enough to win this game. They, you know, it was a four-point game at the end of the day, but A&M led this game by 12, I think, with under 5 minutes to play. So, you know, Purdue is in a spot where it was hard to see them scoring 12 more points, let alone 12 points more than Texas A&M did the rest of the way. So Purdue has to be better against physicality offensively one way or another. But also give Texas A&M credit. They had a good plan for Trey Kaufman-Wren. They took him out of the game. They helped off people on the perimeter to have somebody behind him and in front of him at all times. Had Miles Colvin made a couple of shots early, you know, he was that backside guy who they helped off a little bit. He had some good looks from three early on. They didn't go in. Had he made a couple of those, it's possible this game could have played out a little bit differently, but they didn't go in. So that's not the whole reason, you know, this game went the way it did. It just was a missed opportunity for Purdue offensively early on. But Purdue, you know, didn't just lose this game by not being able to score enough or not being able to go to the foul line, which is another thing I'll rant about here for a second. Texas A&M. And I don't want to sound like blame the refs guy. I hope you guys know me well enough now to know that I've got no horse in this race. I'm an impartial observer. I very, very rarely blame the officials. And I was highly relieved, but sadly mistaken, to think for a minute that I was done talking about the referees after every game once Zach Edey left. And here I am talking about the referees again. Texas A&M playing as hard as it did, as physical as it did, against a team that does throw the ball inside and does try to penetrate off ball screens and get downhill with Braden Smith, for them to only be called for 11 fouls and for Purdue to only shoot 14 free throws versus Texas A&M's 24, unbelievable discipline on Texas A&M's part. I am being sarcastic there. I don't want to fall into any of the stupid trope arguments that have been made around Purdue by dumb fans of other schools for 4 years now, 5 years, whatever it is, at least the last two. But Purdue does play in a way that draws fouls. Texas A&M played really hard, really physical. And when you do that, you're going to accidentally foul more than 11 times in a game, probably. I won't bore you with this here, but I already documented on our website at least five situations right off the top of my head that I noticed from courtside that were at least four of them should have been fouls. And that would have taken A&M's foul count from 11 to 15. So you're talking about like 25% of their fouls right there. Purdue never got to the bonus in either half. And that's just surprising. But anyway, Purdue didn't lose this game because of the officials. They lost it because they turned the ball over too much. They couldn't handle the physicality and intensity of Texas A&M's defense. They lacked depth at center. That was part of this, too. They didn't have a great shooting game. They were okay, but not great. But also, just from a defensive perspective, again, against athleticism off the dribble, Purdue really struggles to contain the bounce up top. That gets them scrambling, and when you scramble, you give up threes and you foul, and that's not good. Texas A&M was a 30% three-point shooting team coming into this game, but when you give bad shooting teams really good looks, you're asking for trouble, and A&M got a lot of good looks in half-court offense, and surprisingly, they shot 10% better than their percentage. They made 9 threes. I think they shot 40% for the game when, again, they came in at 30%, but that's outlier shooting, that Purdue is more responsible for than A&M is just lucky, because Purdue, you know, just really struggles to stop the dribble on that first surge, and then people are rotating. And then as long as the offense makes the right play, which they don't always, but all you got to do is be a good basketball player, smart, experienced, whatever it is. And, you know, Purdue's still playing teams full of grad transfers here and grad students, and it's age is showing sometimes. And these older guys are generally going to make the right decisions. Texas A&M did make the right decisions more often than not, got a lot of open threes off of him, made more than, you know, the statistics would have said they should have. The statistics don't tell you the quality of the shot. So Texas A&M might have been chucking all year from three, knowing that they had the number one offensive rebounding percentage in college basketball, whereas today they get open step-in threes. So there's a difference between the stats and real life, and I think Purdue was on the wrong end of that a bit today. Purdue's got to be better defensively. They've got to be better offensively in games like this. You have Auburn coming up again next week, and you are staring at the reality of being 8-4 when you resume Big Ten play. Probably 9-4. I forgot the Toledo game. But you know what? That's college basketball. And I think, you know, Purdue people have been a little bit shielded from reality here the last couple of years because Matt Painter schedules in a way where you're supposed to lose games early in the year. It's part of the process. It just so happens Purdue never did. They had a couple years in a row there where they were number one in the country at one point in time. They were undefeated in non-conference play, what, 2 years running, 3 years running, whatever it is. And that's not reality. That is a Zach Edey mirage. This is what it's supposed to be like when you schedule the way Matt Painter schedules. And the hope, obviously, is you pad your resume. But also, you're better off late in the season than you are right now because you've played these types of teams. So, again, as happened last year when Purdue made the Final Four and was able to out-tough Tennessee in the Elite Eight, it's probably a product of your non-conference schedule, although that's a bad example because Purdue's non-conference schedule happened to include Tennessee also. But, so Purdue's scheduled in a way that being 9-4 coming out of non-conference play, assuming Purdue can get Toledo, and assuming Purdue loses to Auburn, which is looking like a very fair expectation here, that's kind of a normal season. I think everything before this has been kind of abnormal. I think this is normal. I know nobody likes to lose. I know if you're... Especially if you're young and you haven't been watching college basketball for 200 years like I have, and a lot of my readers probably have. Not 200, but you know what I mean. This is part of it. This is kind of a normal college basketball season, and don't let the abnormal results of the last couple seasons for Purdue make you think that success at that level this time of year is guaranteed. Because it is not. So I am completely rambling right now, and Meridian Street is way too narrow for me to continue on like this. So I am going to cut this off. I said everything I can possibly say. So from Purdue 70-66 Indy Classic loss to Texas A&M, this is Brian Newbert from goldenblack.com. Thank you to the East End Grill and Ripple and Company, Purdue Federal Credit Union, Sand Valley Resort, and the Whitaker Inn for your support. As always, if you are listening to this on your favorite podcast platform, why you would listen to it on your least favorite podcast platform, I have no idea. But if you could leave us a 5-star review and a pleasant, polite, non-profane comment, I would appreciate that profoundly. So I will talk to you guys again next weekend from Birmingham, and this podcast will smell like brisket. So thanks, everybody.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.